Okay, David, good afternoon. I'd like to start by focusing on the evolving situation in Libya. As you're aware, there's been ongoing military activity to enforce the no-fly zone, which the United Nations Security Council imposed last week. New Zealand supports the United Nations Security Council resolution and the actions being taken. They are necessary, proportionate and legal. It is clear from Colonel Gaddafi's actions over the past few weeks that something must be done to stop his brutal attacks on his own people. Colonel Gaddafi has been waging war on his own people and he is displaying total disregard for their lives and safety. The Gaddafi regime must fully comply with the terms of Security Council Resolution 1973 and implement a ceasefire. New Zealand will be fully implementing the sanctions regime agreed by the United Nations. As part of this, we will freeze any assets of the regime's leaders in New Zealand. We've already also implemented a travel ban on the members of the Gaddafi family and its supporters, as listed in UN Resolution 1970. On bilateral relations with Libya are very limited. In terms of trade, they consist primarily of dairy exports and of some very limited education links. We are reviewing the memorandum of cooperation which governs those education links, though I would note it is well outside the scope of the sanctions mandated by the UN Security Council. The agreement has been in place for only 6 months and we've had just a small number of students come to New Zealand during that time. We'll also have a look at this arrangement in light of the developments of the situation in Libya. In the meantime, New Zealand's education officials have been advised to cease any dealing with the Libyan authorities for the time being. In terms of New Zealanders in Libya, I'm advised that there are 4 New Zealand nationals have elected to stay in Libya. Our embassy in Cairo has been in regular contact with the 4 up until a day or so ago when communication became difficult due to phone line outages, but they will continue efforts to re-establish contact. We are aware of 35 other New Zealanders who have departed Libya in recent days and weeks. New Zealanders are advised against all travel to Libya, and any remaining VR advised to depart as soon as it's safe to do so. Cabinet today agreed to make a donation of $1 million to support the Red Cross effort in Japan. The money will be provided to the Japanese Red Cross to promptly support its aid and relief operations in the parts of Japan that most need help. The humanitarian disaster caused by the earthquake and tsunami has seen Japan's friends rally around them. When I spoke to Prime Minister Khan last week, I gave him New Zealand's assurance that we will assist in whatever way we can. Speaking of assisting Japan, I'd like to publicly thank the New Zealand Urban Search and Rescue team, who straight from 3 weeks of exhaustive work in Christchurch were one of the first teams to land in Japan after the earthquake. They returned to New Zealand yesterday, and all of New Zealand thanks them for their efforts, both in Christchurch and in Japan. They are remarkable New Zealanders, and we're very proud of them. Just in terms of my activity this week, tomorrow I'm at caucus and question time. On Wednesday I'm at the Auckland summit for coming back to Wellington for question time. On Thursday I have various events in Wellington. On Friday I'm in Auckland. On Saturday I intend to go back to Christchurch. Details of the visit are still being worked out. In terms of the House this week in the House, it's the government's intention to complete the 2009-10 financial review debate, which is a 4-hour debate, and make further progress on the Marine Coastal and Area Bill. Wednesday is a new date.
So is it in effect that education
Yeah, in the short term that's right, but I think it's important to understand A, there's no requirement to actually suspend that because it's not part of the UN sanctions, and secondly it was actually an overarching permissive agreement, not a specific agreement, in so much that the way it worked was it was an agreement to send Libyan students to New Zealand, but then individual universities or polytechs were then going to strike up an agreement with them. So it was really more a cooperation agreement at a high level.
But it's effectively on hold.
At the moment it's on hold.
So just in light of your comments yesterday about the budget, are you lowering the cap from $800 million for a new spend, or are you saying that you'll reprioritise money from other departments into health and education so there'll be no new money?
Yeah. So what the final makeup of new additional spending looks like has yet to be agreed by the various finance ministers and myself. What it's fair to say is that it'd be my expectation that somewhere between $600 and $800 million of additional spending will be undertaken in health and education but it's my expectation that the vast bulk, if not all of that, will be funded through reprioritisation spending coming from other areas.
So no new money into the budget in that scenario?
Yeah, well, under that scenario, yes, and that's, yeah, that's one proposition that we're looking at. Certainly I wouldn't expect there to be a lot of new spending if there's any in the budget.
What are the other propositions you're looking at?
Sorry?
What are the other propositions you're looking at?
Oh, look, there's a range of things. We've actually asked ministers to go away and work through their various portfolios. I mean, the government spends a lot of money. We've done a lot of reprioritisation over the last couple of years, about $4 billion, so it's not an easy exercise. But we think by looking very carefully and taking, I guess, a 2011 view about whether the expenditure is now as important as it was when it was first allocated, means that we can free up money to effectively fund the increases we need to help in education.
Can you give us some broad areas where you might be looking to make savings? And obviously not health and education, but what areas broadly are you?
Not really. I mean, not today. Health and education are increasing, as I say, but that expenditure is likely to be funded by savings we find in other areas. It's widespread. But we haven't agreed on those yet. So ministers are putting up proposals. The budget team is looking at that, but the budget needs to be put to bed in about no more than about 4 weeks. So we've got about 3 or 4 weeks to consider all of those options.
Is that also the US quake, or because at the start of the year you took an $800 million cap coming down from 1.1? So is your view changed because of the earthquake?
Well, the reality of the earthquake is that it requires us to make payments and undertake expenditure that we weren't anticipating when we came to the start of the year and said that New Zealand was overly reliant on debt. Now, that position still stands. From our point of view, we think New Zealand is overly reliant on debt, and we do want to get back into surplus as quickly as we practically can. So there's only a couple of ways of doing that, as I said yesterday. One is that we fundamentally put a levy on and send that bill to the New Zealand taxpayer. The second option is we cut out our expenditure, and that's the model that we prefer.
So how much bread is there for you left to be cut out, though? If you've already found $4 billion in reprioritisation, I mean, this is going to mean effectively spending cuts for some departments, isn't it?
In some areas, some programs will cease, and no one's arguing this is easy. There's a constituency for every dollar you spend, but the argument here is government is all about the allocation of resources, and at the moment, the allocation that's required is, in our view, Christchurch and health and education, and on that basis, some other expenditure won't be undertaken.
Appreciate the criticism that your substantial tax cuts, particularly for the higher end, now means that you don't have the money that you need to respond to the economy.
Yeah, it's a misguided argument, because if you go and have a look at our tax package, it was fiscally neutral, in fact actually slightly margin positive for the Crown. So in other words, those who say don't have the top end personal tax cuts, they're not the same people who are arguing, you know, we shouldn't have put up GST, we shouldn't have done all the other things we did. So we put together a package in 2010. We thought it delivered not only the right incentives in the economy, we thought it was a better and more proportional split of tax. And as we know, higher income New Zealanders pay a lot more through GST.
Regardless, though, you would have had a bit more money to play with if you hadn't made some of those cuts at those higher ends.
Oh, that's true, but that's equally the case if we hadn't raised GST, well, we wouldn't have had the resources to actually put together the package. I mean, it was our view that the current system, with an anomaly and a gap between the trust rate and the top personal rate, meant that a lot of New Zealanders undertook tax planning and actually didn't fundamentally pay the top personal rate. We think we've got a system that's got integrity, and good design about it, and sends the right incentives. So, yep, of course we could raise the top listing rate if we wanted to, just like we could raise anything. But again, if you go back to the sort of numbers being proposed by Russell Norman, they are talking about putting a tax on middle-income New Zealanders. Yes, they talk about the top end, but the vast bulk of who would be paying a levy would be middle New Zealand, those earning between $40,000 and about $75,000 a year, because that is the bulk of New Zealanders. That's where people's incomes are.
Are you avoiding that because you think it would be politically unpopular, or because you think it would be
ridiculous? No, because I think we're listening to the New Zealand public. It says, look, there's pressure on us at this time. Our petrol prices are going up. We're facing increases in other areas. We're cognizant of that. Government's trying to take the pressure off them. And I think it's, everyone recognises we're in a difficult situation with Christchurch. Everyone, I think, recognises that we need to do something about it. The question is what? And as I say, the options are send the bill to the taxpayer or trim our expenditure. and I think most New Zealanders would support us in trimming the expenditure.
Are you still ruling out trust benefits or changing the
board? Yes, both of those things are off the table.
And in the previous two budgets, you looked at reprioritising shifting spending around that $2 billion
yep.
To the budget. Was that a figure you were working towards this budget already, and just on top of that, or...?
No, I think, you know, we're originally of the view, well, we always go out and look at all of our expenditure and see where we can find savings, but I think we were of the view that we probably would have an additional expenditure of about $800 million. That was our plan. But given the state that we find ourselves in, we've been a bit more aggressive.
Are there any ways, you've ruled out an earthquake levy, are there any other ways of increasing the tax base?
Well, I mean, one important point to remember is that it's almost guaranteed that the EQC levy will rise, and that will rise for every homeowner that has fire insurance, because that's how it's levied. The only other way would be a capital gains tax, and we're not great supporters of that.
Well, what about looking at rates on certain things, say excise tax rates? Would you look at pushing those up?
We're not proposing to do that. I mean, again, it doesn't really matter how you gather the revenue, if that's what you're going to do. It doesn't ultimately matter whether you raise personal taxes, raise GST, put on some new tax. In the end, they take money out of the economy. Now, that's also true of expenditure that you don't otherwise undertake. But I think it's the question of where that is most directly felt. And I think over time, we're confident that the growth rates in 2012-2013, because of the rebuild, will be quite substantial. So our desire is not to take that off taxpayers in day one.
Is that zero new spending aid? Is that ongoing? Is it just for next year? Are you looking at getting rid of those $800 million or $1.1 billion, however you cut it, of ongoing new spending?
Well, we're only looking, putting to be budget 2011 at this point, so we want to comment in future years, but I don't think it'd be practically possible to have no new budget spending component in the future. It may not even be possible in 2011, but we certainly know that we want to get the books back in order as quickly as we can. The important point to remember, of course, though, is if hypothetically we increased health and education by $800 million and funded that by reducing expenditure in other areas, that's an ongoing $800 million, because every single year it's $800 million you're not spending. So it reoccurs through your forecast period.
And when you say you're putting the books back in shape this way, what effect is it going to have? How quickly can you get back to the surface? What sort of impact would that have on your debt track?
Yeah, so we had some initial advice from Treasury. I don't really want to talk about that today because I haven't had an opportunity to really kick the tyres on it, but let's put it this way. The best I can say is it makes quite a lot of difference.
What about the capital expenditure? Are you looking at that as well?
Yes.
What's your plans there?
Don't want to talk about that today.
You've moved from 1.1 down to 800 down to close to, if not actually zero,
yep.
In pretty quick time. How can we be confident that this isn't a slash and burn and that the right decisions are being made to cut the right things?
Yeah, so in the end, that's called a general election. I mean, we will put together a budget and the New Zealand public will pass its opinion on that budget through the election process. And that's what an election's always about, the allocation of resources and whether the general public think you've got that right or wrong. All I can say to the New Zealand public is this. The earthquake's putting a substantial pressure on the government's books. The government's in a position where it doesn't want to run reckless levels of debt. We've been quite transparent with the New Zealand public about what we're doing. We've been quite honest about what we think is acceptable levels of debt and what aren't. And we intend to put together a set of accounts, which means that we are responsible, prudent managers of that economy. Now, in the end, they'll judge us on that. Hopefully, they'll judge us positively. But our political opponents are not doing that. And in the end, they'll have to get judged on ultimately whether they are considered as a responsible set of accounts.
The IMF this afternoon has suggested that the government should focus its spending reductions in those areas of middle-class transfer, some that you've identified already, working for families, student loans, around the margins, but not the interest rate you've said,
yep.
And maybe KiwiSaver. Fair for us to assume that that's where you will look for the biggest portion of those savings?
Again, you know, it's dangerous to speculate with only a small amount of information, but as I've indicated earlier, you know, I think the top end reach of working for families is a logical place to go, and again, those who argue there should be a levy put on high-income earners, I hear Phil Goff saying don't play with working for families. On the same breath, he says put a levy, I think, or you know, tax higher income New Zealanders. Well, that's illogical, because if you actually do go and adjust working for families at the higher end, that's exactly what you're doing. You're targeting higher income New Zealanders who enjoy the drop in the top person rate.
Are we speculating on not enough information, or would you be?
Well, look, I have not had an opportunity to go through line by line with every minister and with those ministers yet. We've had some initial discussions, but as you'll be aware, things move around. We look at the various merits. We often refine what we're doing. So when we haven't put the budget to bed yet. We will in the next 4 weeks, is my guess. And when we do that, we'll be in a position to talk from a position of authority. But we know where we want to go and what our goal is.
The IMF is also recommending land tax and the capital gains tax. Are they completely off the cards?
No, off the table from our point of view.
But if you're implementing them, you'd be able to reduce income taxes, which would put more money in the pockets of all New Zealanders, and you want them to be spending more.
Yeah, and at the risk of repeating myself from last year, we looked at a land tax, and land tax has, one, reduced the value of land in New Zealand by definition, and it has an impact on every single homeowner in New Zealand. I wouldn't have thought we'd want to do that on the back of a very weak housing market at the moment. Capital gains tax is already in place. They don't produce you a lot of revenue up front, so they wouldn't actually pay for the Christchurch earthquake in day one. And in our view, they are an inefficient form of taxation.
I'm presuming that most of your costs in Christchurch are infrastructure and capital expenditure. Why did you just defer infrastructure budgets in other parts of the country? Why slash social spending in other areas like that?
Okay, so firstly, three costs in terms of the earthquake. So one is the capital rebuilds. That is where the government primarily funds infrastructure that we can't expect the Christchurch Council to pay on their own anymore. The second is we get a reduction in tax revenue because there's just less economic activity for us to tax in Christchurch. And the third is payments that sit outside of capital but have a requirement on the Crown. So, for instance, the welfare package, which or business support package, which as of today is running at $145 million. So they are the three areas of costs. Why don't we stop just spending money in capital in certain parts of the country? And the answer to that is that would itself slow economic activity in those areas. So while we're very supportive of Christchurch and we want to see Christchurch rebuilt, we can't do that at the cost of grinding Auckland to a halt or delivering an infrastructure time bomb in Auckland and or Wellington or other parts of the country. So actually that expenditure that's happening in things like Waterview is all about delivering an efficient operating infrastructure.
That's highly debatable, isn't it, whether you're delivering infrastructure time bomb just by delaying some roading projects?
Well, I don't think so, actually. If you look at the benefit-cost ratio about in the process that we go through in approving those roads, actually the bar is set quite high, and I would argue very strongly with you, if you want Auckland to be an efficient city and one that's likely to be the home of most internal and external migration, we actually need to continue to invest there, as we do around the rest of the country. So we can make those choices.
How does it make Auckland more efficient to allow sprawl further, which seems to be one of the main criticisms of the government's proposed development plan?
Well, we can have that debate actually on Wednesday when we have the...
How would you characterise that?
Well, I think there's always a debate about the metropolitan urban limit and what the spatial plan should look like. I mean, we've been very supportive of getting that spatial plan in the right space before there's too much progress in Auckland. That's why I raised it in the very first inauguration event that I went to for the new Auckland Council. That will be subject to our debate when we go there on Wednesday. But there's always a range of views about the merits of a metropolitan urban limit and keeping it tightly controlled.
So when did the $800 million figure disappear? When was that decided that new spending wouldn't happen? And when were other ministers and, more importantly, public service chiefs told about it?
Without being facetious, 12:51 on the 27th of February. I mean, the reality is New Zealand changed at that point, and the government can't close its eyes to that. Unlike the opposition, we live in the real world. We actually have to put together a set of accounts that work.
I take that point, but when did you say to public service chief executives who have been planning for a budget, look, guys, there's no new money, you're going to have to go back to the drawing board and come up with cuts? When were they told?
Well, chief executives have a constant ongoing dialogue. I mean, DPMC are always talking to them, State Services is always talking to them. I think it became clear to everyone when we started to get a sense of the magnitude of the cost in Christchurch that the government just couldn't sit back idly and do nothing. So the responses are either increases in taxation, high levels of debt, or reduction in expenditure. Our preference would be reduction in expenditure. But as I say, very much hasten to add, with an increase in health and education,
so there is more. For the last 2 or 3 weeks, they've already been redoing their budget, essentially.
Well, they're coming up with proposals for their minister.
Do you say that New Zealand changed at that point, which suggests quite a fundamental change in this budget, like quite a dramatic, maybe we're going to be a shock in the budget?
I don't think it will be. But what is true is that the focus of the budget was always going to be savings and investment. Now, they have a flavour of savings and investment to it, but by definition, the events of February 22 changed the focus of the budget, and it has to have an element of the Christchurch rebuild in it. The accounts will reflect how significant that event was. And you see, what actually ultimately happens is the Treasury's accounting treatment means that we actually have to expense the cost, or the anticipated cost, of the earthquake in day one. We actually meet all of those costs in day one, but that is going to knock out our budget deficit around. It's going to knock out growth, anticipated growth rates around for 2011. It's going to reduce our tax revenue. Everything changed on February 22nd.
We're expecting an announcement tomorrow from Christchurch. Is that going to be an extension of the welfare package, something around there?
Bluntly, I think it's around the business support.
And is that going to be a financial package for businesses?
Again, I don't want to go into great deal of details of that. It's just one part of what we're doing. I wouldn't want to overstate it. There's a lot of different elements of business support that we're giving, and the first part has obviously been around keeping the employer-employee relationship together. Over time, there'll be lots of other things we do, but it's one step in that direction.
What about that job subsidy support package? We're near in 4 or 5 weeks now.
Yep.
You must be close to making some announcement, tell you, about some kind of extension for that.
Yes, the Cabinet had a discussion about that today. I guess it's fair to say we haven't finalised what the new package will look like, but I think it's fair to say the criteria will tighten, and I think that's actually reflected on the ground, actually, where some people think, the package has been appropriately set but was extraordinarily generous, and as things settle down, we need to either we need to make some decisions about that. So there will be an extended package, in my view. Probably will announce that. I guess it'll have to be next week. But it will come with tighter criteria than the first one.
And when will we see the new parts, if you like? And have you really got time to
check
someone lined up to
do that? Okay, so Cabinet's going to consider that issue next Monday. And be my expectation that there will be an announcement fairly shortly after that. So my expectation is next week. There is someone that temporarily might be able to run it, if that's the way we ultimately go, but the final person to run the NC has not been determined yet, again, on the basis that that's what Cabinet ultimately decides it wants to do.
What sort of skills does that person require? Is it more a public sector role, or is it, does it have some private sector experience needed as well?
But both is useful. I mean, it's a coordination, isn't it, really? I mean, there's a lot of different things happening in Christchurch, a lot of different departments that feed in there. They need to be able to work with a lot of different government departments, harness resources, work closely with the council, and actually work with interested parties.
So at the moment, we've had a debate, for instance, on the council.
You're not going to speculate on names.
When you talk about looking at areas of spending that aren't maybe as important now as they were originally, how much would it be worthwhile saving and fixing things like Ministry of Women's Affairs and those other separately socially based funds?
Look, in the end, every bit of expenditure needs to be considered on its merits, and you'll always get, there's always a range of views on what is worthwhile expenditure and what is not. So while there'll be people that would believe that is not the case when it comes to the Ministry of Women's Affairs, as in good quality expenditure, there'd be others that would be vehement supporters of it. Again, I just don't want to go through those line by line. All I can tell you is we're going to look at a range of options and consider what we think is best.
Trevor Mellor sitting in the hospital in Dunedin, you got any message of sympathy for him?
We don't like to see him in that condition, so we wish him a speedy recovery. Tell him to go on the cycleway next time on his own so he can't hit another bike.
Just going back to funding the Christchurch costs, do you not have faith in the New Zealand public that they would be prepared to cough up, say, a one-off tax increase, considering how much generosity they've shown so far, and the sort of outpouring of willingness to try and help? They want people want to help. Wouldn't it be a clean and easy way of doing it? And considering that, before the earthquake, you seem to be terrified of blowing out your borrowing because you're scared of rating agencies, and all of a sudden borrowing is the way to go.
Well, no, it's not actually. I mean, this is the whole point of the debate we're having this afternoon. I mean, borrowing is inevitable the way that Treasury actually measures the cost of the earthquake, because it expenses that cost in day one, takes all of it to the balance sheet, and that has an impact. But in fact, what we're talking about is how we pay for that expenditure. Now, say those options are borrow it and do nothing about it. That's not an option from our point of view for exactly the reasons we laid out in January. Tax people more for it, which is the proposition you're putting up. Or the third option is that we cut our expenditure. Now, it's not that we don't have faith in the New Zealand public or a belief that they would back us. I mean, in the end, they will be paying a bit more because they'll pay more through the EQC levy. But the question is, what do we think is going to have the best impact on the economy? We don't want to snuff out jobs and economic growth as confidence in other parts of the country is starting to emerge. We don't want to put more pressure on middle-income New Zealanders. So we're not in a perfect position. We face choices, and none of them are great. But in our view, cutting expenditure, which is more debatable in light of the current circumstances, is the right response.
That's essentially an ideological position, isn't it? Because you're a national party. If you're a Labour party, you'd say, we just got to
No. Not necessarily. I mean, on that basis, you'd say, well, we wouldn't cut if your proposition is that we somehow support better off New Zealanders than others, then you'd say we wouldn't cut working for families where it reaches into the higher income levels, whereas one of the propositions we're putting up is we might.
But if you're making cuts that fast, they're going to be hasty and ill-considered, aren't they?
How can
they cut that are well thought through in a matter of weeks?
I mean, look, at the end of the day, as I said to you, there's only three options. Do nothing, that's not an option. Go and tax people more, that's not our preferred option. We'll try and find some savings. Now, in the end, if we can't find savings that we think we can undertake without jeopardising the services that are there, we wouldn't do it. But in our view, on the initial first blush look at it, we think we can.
Just going back to something earlier regarding the budget, are there proposals to merge some government agencies or departments or act some altogether that are currently being considered as part of this?
Well, we're considering the long-term structure of the state sector, as we indicated to you some weeks ago, and the first step on that was the putting together the Ministry of Primary Industries. I can't sit here and say there's a list of a whole of other ones that we're going to do today, but I think in due course we'll consider other options on their merits.
But this is sort of a part of a longer-term...
Yeah, it was underway anyway.
Does it not because of the circumstances, the
effect that would change in the budget? That's right. I mean, look, I think at the end of the day, I mean, that the anticipated savings from the merging of the Ministry of Agriculture and Forestry and MFISH is about $10 million a year, so that's $10 million we can put towards not having to put up taxes, but it's not happening as a result of the earthquake, it's happening as a result of the fact we think it's more efficient structure.
So are those sort of savings in the scheme of $800 million quite small there, are they, from merging?
Yeah, but I mean, again, they all add up.
How can you give us any idea of is it several that you're considering merging?
I don't really have. I don't have the latest information on that. I mean, that's an ongoing project. I mean, the one obvious one that we looked at and was obviously the Primary Industries Ministry, but I'm sure over time there'll be others and other things that we'll look at in that space. But as I've said in the past, it's actually more about the principles of about whether we're delivering efficient government and whether we're delivering an efficient state sector, not specifically around the economy.
Does Libya have assets in New Zealand too free?
To the best of our knowledge, no.
Are dairy exports banned as part of the sanctions?
No. Our belief is they don't fit within the UN sanctions. They are pretty much all of our economic activity with Libya, and they account for about $51 million as of 2010. We don't believe they're part of the sanctions. And I mean, it'll be true for other countries as well. There'll be many other countries that will obviously observe the UN sanctions but will continue to have some economic trade with Libya.
Is there a future role for the earthquake commissioners that were appointed after the
September
earthquake?
In terms of the ones on the Earthquake Recovery Commission?
Yeah, those guys.
The view would be if there was a new entity that came along, it would replace the Recovery Commission.
So they would have new roles within the government department?
Well, I can't say that they would or they wouldn't. I just say it's a different entity that would be in charge.
Have we considered or been asked in regards to any military involvement with what's going on in the region? Obviously not to do with the no-fly zone, but
yeah, sure.
Anything in a naval sense? Or?
No, we haven't been asked and we wouldn't expect to be asked. I mean, there appears to be more than enough resources within the European countries that are involved, the US and the Arab League, that it's not likely that New Zealand would be asked and we don't believe we could contribute. Okay.